Colorado sway. Cause when I'm in that play, I don't really know just how to act. And when I'm in that go, you know I'm acting bad. Holla, get a bus with my Colorado sway. My Colorado sway, my Colorado sway. I think they like my Colorado sway. My Colorado sway, my Colorado sway. Might not sway, I think they like my Colorado sway. My Colorado sway, yeah. It's pushing 180. Speeding past competition, see you later, baby. Colorado Army, with soldiers like the Navy. Yeah. And voters where we stationed, patiently awaiting. Whoa. When I hit the field, it's so hard to behave. Yeah. I'm Colorado swagging as the crowd do the wave. Look into my eyes. I can tell that you afraid, cause you know we finna hit ya. Hit ya. Hey, you on your own now, why you watching the official? Chill. You just better hope you make it to the next whistle. And we ain't playing with you, you can get it anytime. Yeah. It started at the scrimmage, we gon' win it at the line. Chill. My Colorado swag in the middle of the ring. Throwing blows, knocking down team after team. I think they like my Colorado swag, cause when I'm in that play, I don't really know just how to act. And when I'm in it go, you know I'm acting bad.
All right, welcome into a new Buff Stampede Radio. Adam Mustertiger, the publisher of BuffStampede.com, joined as always by football analyst William Gardner. William, we got some staff changes to talk about here with the Colorado Buffaloes.
Yeah, but a little bit of something going on this week, that's for sure. That's right before spring ball. So, I mean, it's good before that it's before spring ball, but I guess we got a staff and we'll see how it goes. I guess I don't know how it plays out with Marv as the defensive coordinator. Feels like we're down a coach. We're gonna need another secondary coach, I guess, whatever else Livingston was doing.
Yeah, so for the folks that haven't seen yet, Uncle Neely, Christopher Neely, reported this morning, obviously he's in Coach Prime's inner circle, that Robert Livingston is set to move on with a role with the Denver Broncos, with Christopher Marv set to take over as the new defense coordinator in Boulder. He was the defense coordinator. Marv was at Virginia Tech in 22, 23, 24. Some of the overall numbers on that, William, look pretty good for him. But, you know, Virginia Tech fans were not huge fans of his, as we were kind of reading as he came over. So kind of conflicting thoughts here in terms of him taking over that DC role.
Yeah, I think, and I think he's an excellent hire as a linebackers coach. I think he's a question mark as a defensive coordinator. I think he had some good moments in his previous stints in that role, and but clearly got fired in that role at his last stop. So, you know, who is he as a defensive coordinator? I guess we're going to find out. Part of me is happy to have a front seven guy run the defense more so than a defensive back guy, but you know, combined with Dante Carter's defensive line coach, it raises some real questions about this defensive staff to me. And other questions about Coach Prime and his ability to hire people and his willingness to actually go get serious coaches. I mean, I guess I'll just throw this out here right now. You know, I've been saying this year after year, I am sick to death of Colorado being a place where dudes get their on-the-job training, because we keep hiring these guys that have no background whatsoever. And I guess I'm talking about Carter now rather than Marv. But, you know, the Marv thing, I don't know how long this has been in the works with Livingston going to the Broncos. I mean, you can't fault Livingston or Pecco, and I don't think that says anything bad about Coach Prime or CU, that they both wanted to go back to the NFL. That's where their careers have been. The question mark becomes, how do you fill those spots once they do leave? And I think, you know, I think Dante Carter is a huge fail, and Marv is question mark.
On paper, for sure. Yeah, it's tricky kind of analyzing some of these coaching hires, right? Because we've seen it go both ways, where there's a lot of fanfare. The guy comes in and he's a great coach. Right. Or there's a lot of fanfare. He comes in and is an epic disaster.
Yeah, like you know,
and vice versa. And Gunnar White, I think, is a good example from last year.
And Gary Bernardi's the other way, who had coached everywhere in the country, came in here and snuck. So, you know, sorry.
Goes both ways. Yeah, no, no, you're good. That doesn't make for great podcasting, though. To say, we'll wait and see. That doesn't really work.
Well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, I was been thinking about it back and forth a lot just yesterday and today. And you know, every great coach had to start somewhere, you know. Nick Saban was a nobody at some point, got his opportunity. Dante Carter has got he was a GA at CU last year, and he was 1 year defensive line coach at Texas State, which is NAIA, which is not far removed from high school football, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Texas College, actually.
Texas College,
Texas,
right.
Texas State, yeah. I think, is FBS. Yeah, yeah. Texas College, right. Yeah. You're talking, yeah, lack of experience there on his resume, for sure. Keep going, sorry.
And I think, that team that 1 year he was there seemed to have a pretty good, do a pretty good job up front. But, and the other thing I give him is he played the position. So, you know, he was 6 foot, saw him listed at one, he played at Southeast Louisiana and Prairie View A&M. One of them had him listed 6 foot, 295, and the other was 6 foot, 340. So I guess he got bigger, but he's played the position. So that's an advantage. Honestly, I think I'm more qualified than he is, but I didn't play the position. So at least he's got that going for him. But I have to wonder what this says about, I don't know what it says about Coach Prime or his hiring. You know, some people say, well, this means he doesn't have good connections. I don't know. Maybe he thinks this guy's the right guy. I don't know. You know, I don't think it's a serious hire, but it may work out great. Who knows? Like you said, Gunnar White, I think has worked out great, but they put two experienced NFL, former NFL players around him to help him out with that too. You know, he'll have, Carter will have Hilo with the edge guys. And I don't know how much experience Hilo has with defensive tackles, but technique is superbly important on defensive tackles, in terms of hand placement, foot placement, pad level, things like that. You know, Dante Carter, having played at Southeast Louisiana and Prairie View A&M, did not get top level coaching. No way around that. So I have to wonder, you know, I didn't see him in practice. Coach Prime did. Does he recruit? I don't know. Too many question marks, really, to give a definitive answer. I got to tell you, though, that defensive tackle room just scares the crap out of me, because we're undermanned, and now we got a brand new coach with no experience, you know, and I'm looking at that, you know, I'm looking at our list here, you know, it's like Joe Pecco, I don't know if he's coming. Josiah Manu, he ain't ever going to play at this level. Ezra Christensen, who knows, you know, we got three guys or four guys maybe at 300 or bigger. So we've got question marks in that defensive tackle room. It ought to be scary to anybody out there.
We got a lot of comments out there. A lot of thoughts here on Marv being the DC now. Anything you want to comment on here?
I'm just looking through real quick right now. Somebody asked who coaches the linebackers now. Well, Marv will coach the linebackers still. The defense coordinator almost coaches a position as well. So Marv will still be the linebackers coach. I see one person says, Dante Carter has coached a lot of NFL players also. That's not correct. He's done my understanding is he did off-season training with them, and that is not coaching the position. That is not working on details and things like that. That's like what they're doing in the weight room now with the strength and conditioning staff. And somebody obviously will need a new defensive backs coach in there, like I mentioned. I don't know. I think, you know, somebody says Livingston was horrible, so I have to at least give him an opportunity. Well, was Livingston bad because the personnel wasn't any good? I don't know. I mean, it's a reasonable take on it, I guess. I'm just kind of rolling through these. I think there's a lot to kind of digest with all of this, and the fact that the Marv thing just really kind of happened it didn't happen this morning, but we all found out about it this morning. So we are processing it in real time, you and I.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think even with the amount of money that he was making, your druthers would be for Robert Livingston to still be the DC in Boulder, no?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think absolutely. You know, you look at, well, so I here, and let's break it down the other way. It's like, you look at that offensive staff, and I think we got one of the top offensive staffs in the conference. I think we're going to have a great offense. You look at the defense, and there's question marks in the players on the defensive tackle spots, and lots of question marks on this coaching staff now. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Now, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. It could all be great. I don't know. Maybe we're not being a defensive power and offense. Who knows? Anything, things can happen in college football. But these two hires, I guess a promotion and a high, well, I guess they're both promotions, are disturbing to me. You know, I don't know how much, you know, you had to have the people in place for spring ball. I think you had a lot of time to get a defensive tackles coach. I don't know how, at what point they knew that Livingston was leaving in order to search for a defensive coordinator. It's not the worst move in the world to elevate a former power four defensive coordinator to the position, but there's question marks.
There's no doubt about that. How much does this temper kind of your optimism going into spring ball?
Well, my optimism around this season is based almost entirely on the offense and has been for quite some time. What I want on defense is just to be, you know, competent enough that we don't have to, we don't get outscored 46-44 every week. You know, I still think there's a lot of, my excitement on the defense is at the linebacker position and the edge position. I think those two spots have some real talent on them. I think there are guys that could be something at the defensive tackle spot, but they're mostly question marks. You know, Santana Hopper's a hell of a player, but he's too small for that spot. Ezra Christensen, we don't know if he's going to be able to play. He's 280, so he's somewhat small for that spot. You know, and the rest of the guys haven't really lit it up at this level. I noticed in the latest chart for the eligibility chart that I'm now seeing Quincy Wiggins and Kylan Salter on the defensive line. They're disturbing. I mean, that's you know, that takes Quincy Wiggins, who's potentially a difference maker at edge, and basically throws him out of the frickin'. He might as well not even play the damn dude because he's not cut out for that inside spot. Kylan Salter's not nearly big enough to be in there either. So I don't know.
That was based off the spring game draft, which we'll share our reactions to. Yeah, yeah. But that's where those guys were listed on there. So
right.
I know when we saw Josiah Manu, we knew that he was not going to be ready on the O-line anytime soon. I think this might be a move for him just to be kind of if he can be serviceable in a role if we really need you this year instead of redshirting, that might be kind of where he fits in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we're taking stuff from the – I think a lot of guys might have been listed at a position for the draft just for the purposes of that draft to get guys evenly distributed along the team, but I don't know, you know. I think if Salter and Wiggins are a defensive tackle, that's two guys just wasted. I don't think Manu will be a player at this level, but we'll see. You know, I mean, he's not quick enough to be an edge. He's not really big enough at this point to be a defensive tackle, but we'll see what happens in his development down the line.
All right. Well, you know what we do this time of the show. So let's go. Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupas and a Chicken Bacon Ranch Nacho Fry option at Taco Bell. This is Taco Bell. At it again with the best innovation in the industry. And now they are combining their savory slow roasted chicken inside a cult classic format with their new limited time only Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupas. Get your set of two street sized chalupa shells filled with slow roasted chicken, flavorful bacon, freshly prepared pico de gallo, shredded cheese, and avocado ranch sauce. And this is a chalupa shell that is coated with cheddar. So you can't go wrong here. Taco Bell isn't just limiting this Americana flavor combination to its street chalupa format, but why not get this pairing on Taco Bell's iconic nacho fries. These loaded fries deliver everything you love about nacho fries, but also leveled up with slow roasted chicken, bacon, nacho cheese, pico de gallo, and avocado ranch sauce. And don't forget to add one of the new items from the Taco Bell Lux Value Menu. With 10 items for $3 or under, the Lux Value Menu at Taco Bell delivers bold, irresistible flavor and crave-worthy items at unbelievable prices. Nobody delivers everyday value and supports your hometown teams like Taco Bell. Live Moss at Taco Bell. Have you tried those nacho fries from Taco Bell yet?
No, but I heard, saw that picture of the chalupa coated with cheddar. Can't go wrong with that. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, sounds great. We'll get your reaction on the next show. I want to get your reaction now to the spring game draft that took place. A fun exercise for Colorado. We delved in some negativity with, you know, maybe some underwhelming staff changes just in terms of expectations going into spring ball. But in terms of that, the energy in that room, that team meeting room that day, that was fun to see.
Yeah, and I think some people, I've seen some people that are taking it way too seriously, and you know, it's just I think it's a device. I think it's for the entire spring practice, not just for the game, to sort of have teams to compete in various different ways. I don't know if that's how they're going to do it, but I think it was fun for the players. I thought it was interesting. Who got picked as the leaders? Finneseth and Taylor, Bo LaPenna, top is Zach Atkins and RJ Johnson. That was interesting.
Yeah.
And then who they pick, you know, somebody got all bent out of shape because Julian Lewis didn't get picked first. Well, that's not the format of the darn thing, but I think it was fun. I think it gives them all teams. I think they're already doing things like tug of wars and things like that. And the point is to, I think, foster competition and camaraderie. So I think it's a good thing, and I think it's fun, and we'll see what happens with it.
Yeah, no, I think the teams are fairly even. You could tell there was some guys drafting their buddies in those groups from time to time. I don't know if it went completely GM style in the NFL, like if you were going to get fired from your job if you made the wrong pick. There might be some different selections throughout there, but Ben Finneseth, he's worth the price of admission by himself, even on crutches in there, you know, kind of conducting the room there. There's going to be 14 spring practices before the April 11th spring game. What are you hoping to see out of this team as you kind of watch this group grow over these 14, 15?
Well, they need to have chemistry and not continuity. That's not what I'm looking for. Chemistry and they, first of all, the offense needs to, well, everybody needs to learn everything because everybody's new. So they need to learn the offense and defense. I want to see some leaders step up. You know, we didn't really have any leaders on defense last year. We need to find them this year.
Topic buyer, but yeah, it was limited.
Yeah,
Jeremiah Brown,
and that, you know, that would took a couple games in, but I think we need the guys to establish themselves, and I think we got. I mean, Gideon Lampron is the first guy I think of just off the top of my, you know, and a Santana Hopper is another one. So I want to see some guys really establish themselves as leaders. I want to see, you know, I want to see what Marv does with the defensive philosophies. I want to see what Carter does with those defensive tackles. So, you know, I want to see a more competent team too, fewer mistakes, fewer penalties and things like that. And I want to watch and see what Marion is actually doing with his offense here and who ends up being the guys that really make things happen. Now, you know, you and I have seen enough spring games to know that the stars of the spring game tend to disappear in the regular season sometimes, but it'll be fun to watch it anyway. So I want to see them come together as a team. They need to have, you know, the 2023 team had problems with chemistry. The 2024 team did not. You see the difference, you know. So they need to work. That needs to be a big priority. And everybody's new, including some of the coaches, and so they need to get figured out working together with each other, what have you. You know.
Yeah, we talked about you know, the spring game draft. I'm curious who you would pick at each position. If you were in Ben Finneseth or Bray Kopetz's shoes, let's start with quarterback. I mean, it's got to be Julian, right?
Dominic Ponder, man, what are you crazy? Yeah, I mean, well, everybody's gonna automatically jump on the Julian Lewis name, but you know, Isaac Wilson, I think, is a legitimate choice there as well. You know. That's the first time in a long time I think we have a backup quarterback who could legitimately come in and have confidence in. But I think it's pretty obvious that those two are head and shoulders above the other two, but Juju's probably the obvious pick.
Running back.
Now this is a bigger question mark to me. And it kind of depends on what you're looking for. I think I'm picking Richard Young first. But maybe DeKalon Taylor.
I think he was the first pick in the draft for the running backs.
Yeah, and you know, DeKalon Taylor
was already there.
A very different athlete at running back, and both would complement each other, so neither one of those would be the worst pick in the world in this particular offense.
Yeah, I would. Those would be my top two picks as well, and you've got some good options in there. At receiver... Yeah. I would probably, if Joseph Williams was fully healthy going into spring ball, I'd probably pick him. But Scudero got picked first.
Yeah, Joseph Williams, I think, is the most obvious choice to me. But that being said, Scudero and Campbell played in this offense, so they're going to have an advantage in spring because they'll be familiar with what's going on. And you know, Ernest Campbell can run like the wind blows, as Forrest Gump would say.
Zach Atkins and Brady Kopetz were a part of that drafting team. They are the most experienced, the most expected to have an impact on the Colorado Buffaloes team as tight ends in 2026. Their first pick was Fisher Clements. There's not a lot in that room right now in terms of established talent.
Yeah, it's curious to me. I haven't seen or heard anything about Corbin Lazier or Zane D'Souza in winter conditioning, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I was curious that they weren't picked, but I saw one person say, well, you know, how come Fisher Clements is the first tight end picked? The other two dudes are already on teams.
All right. O-line. This is, I'm going to leave this up to you, William.
Well, I think I would be inclined to pick Yaya or Larry Johnson is coming back from last year and being fairly proven entities, but to me, he who shall not be named to be named, center is the most important position. So I would pick Demetrius Hunter because he's a 2-year starter in the Big 12 at that position and done a fair job. So I would take Demetrius Hunter and then build my line from the inside out if it was me.
Okay. I like that. They were kind of doing the interior and exterior O-line separately. I'd be tempted to pick Phil Pustin, man. Like, I feel like he's got a chip on his shoulder as a tackle.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good pick. I think the center position is so critical to the offensive line. Yaya Atti is another one because he could play all three of those interior positions, so he gives you a little bit of flexibility as well and also has some playing experience. You know, the question mark on Houston is how will he come back after a year out of the game and a knee surgery, but he seems to look good, and so that wouldn't be a bad pick at all. I mean, there's a lot of good options on that offensive line this year, and I think there'd be some really good competition.
Defensive line, some question marks here and there. Who would you pick first?
Well, based on who we have, we think is available right now, I think Ezra Christensen is the top choice. Santana Hopper is probably the second choice, but I'm just concerned about him at 265 or 270. You know, I don't know if he'll be able to put on another 5 or 10 pounds, get up closer to 280 or not for this year. But you know, he's a senior, so he's probably reached, you know, guys still continue to mature physically even into the NFL, so he could get bigger. But I think those two are the obvious two choices, and nobody else is really close.
On the edge, it feels like Toby Enene has the most experience there, the best shot of really having a standout season for the Buffaloes.
Yeah, I mean, I think Quincy Wiggins should be one of the starting edges, you know, but they put him on the defensive line for the purpose of this draft, or the defensive tackle. And then, you know, I'm still pretty excited about Eziogu and that speed, but I think we need to see a lot of these guys on the field in spring and see who really steps forward and makes things happen.
Linebacker, you already said it. Gideon Lamprin would be your first pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leona Lifa would be the second pick, right? And then Tyler Martinez, I feel
yeah,
like I one, think two, so. Three there, kind of going into spring ball.
And I think those three guys make a good interior linebacking trio. And then I think those three freshmen, out of those three freshmen, some of those guys can going to be able to play this year.
Man, that gap in the eligibility, though, at linebacker, yeah. Not good.
Well, I mean, That's kind of how. Go, I think, with the transfer portal moving forward, you know, you're going to have gaps and whatever each year. But, you know, seeing with yet to see how this year goes, I think we need to keep more guys next year if we possibly can. But it's sort of jarring.
Yeah, 10 scholarship cornerbacks expected to be part of the mix. There are a lot of names to throw out here. Justin Anglin, I would think, is the first pick here?
Yeah, probably. I think him and Johnson are, you know, Johnson's already on one of the teams, so he wasn't an available pick. But Eglin, I think, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there, and that's another thing I'm curious to see how these cornerbacks sort themselves out in spring ball as well.
Creed Thomas could end up being a really special player too for Colorado. Yeah. So I'm anxious to see what he does this spring. And then part of that mix is Preston Ashley, who was the first nickelback selection over Boo Carter. Those are when I talk about spring ball, like battles between those two, that's going to be fun to watch because Preston Ashley, he has impressed me from his high school film on and yeah. Boo Carter, like, you know, the thing that's kept him away from succeeding is just being a present teammate. And so if he can do that, and there was a lot of fanfare in that team meeting room when Boo Carter got drafted, so that hopefully felt good to him, and he feels like he's part of this culture now.
Yeah, and it's time for him to grow up. I mean, he's got NFL potential if he gets his head right and stay, you know, becomes a team player rather than a Boo Carter player. You know, there's probably. Without thinking, going through every name on the list, he might have the most NFL potential of anybody on this team.
Safety, who do you got there as your first pick?
Well, Randon Fontenette is
that's my guy too.
Yeah. Top safety. Yeah. Although I think, you know, he's a guy that needs to be playing maybe a little more up towards the line of scrimmage as well. So Randon Fontenette is a guy that you can do a lot of different things with. You can play him at that edge or outside linebacker, blitz with him. Play him at a regular safety, but he and Boo Carter, I think, are a hell of a pair of athletes.
All right, special teams, Elliot Arnold, your first pick as place kicker.
You don't want Josh McCormick? I don't know. What do I know from kickers, man?
He's a kickoff guy, McCormick. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, just don't kick it into the center's ass. That's all I'm asking for.
Okay. As far as punter, I think we can feel good about Damon Greaves
being
the guy.
Yeah,
Long snapper, we got Trey Young coming in, got Luke Whitting coming back, and Nelson Williams coming back. So intriguing battles set to take place this spring for the Colorado Buffaloes. Any other thoughts from strength and conditioning? Coach Prime went on a tour of campus the other day. He visited C4C, which is kind of a cool spot there on campus where you get a lot of different cuisines as a student at CU. Any other thoughts before we kind of move on to spring ball?
No, not really. I think that, you know, it looks to me like there's more, more energy, more teamwork, more camaraderie in some of the videos, you know, but really it's the same every year, you know, bunch of athletes lifting weights. I don't know, you know, how much, you know, after, you know, 20 years of watching this, you know, it's limited how much you can really take from the weight room and winter conditioning, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Ernest Campbell did run a 6.70 in the 60 meter dash at his second meet in at Colorado. He's only been practicing with the track team for a little while. He was actually disappointed with that, even though he won his heat. It's fun to see the football players out there supporting another track athlete.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, I don't know what you got to do in practice as a sprinter. Sprinting to me is like sprinting to the refrigerator for something to eat. But, you know, if you can run fast, you can run fast. And
yeah,
he can run fast. So that's just kind of fun and exciting to see him out doing that.
I don't think we talked about this on our last show. Colorado season opener got moved to Thursday night at Georgia Tech. I always enjoy that, William, because when I got to cover the game, I can at least get on the plane back Friday, can watch some college football on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to the fact that they moved that back a little bit. It's going to be humid as heck down there in Atlanta at that time.
Well, that's the way it goes. And that's, you know, so much of this team is from the South. So it's not going to be a big surprise to most of them. I think the Thursday game, it gives you, you know, an extra day to prepare for the next week. I'm trying to pull up the schedule here. And so, so Georgia Tech, it's not like we're going to need an extra day for Weber State. If we do, we're in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. But,
Weber State, holy cow, I'm not sure where they are. But I don't know. Game is played when it's played to me. Show up and play it. Thursday night games are still a little weird to me for college. Even Friday night games are weird.
Okay. You're a traditionalist. You want Saturday afternoon at 1:30, which I'd be on board with. But I understand kind of the television revenue side of this now, where they got to create that revenue for these programs and these conferences to make money to pay these players.
Yeah, and it's not so much, just to me that Thursday and Friday night is high school football night.
Yeah. Colorado spring game is going to be on April 11th. I think we're due for some good weather for the spring game this year.
Well, I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't bet the farm on that one. You never know what you're going to get for a spring game here in Colorado. I think hopefully that we have some fun out there and see these two teams play against each other and see a little spirited action, whatever. Hopefully by that time we'll have some question marks, at least a little bit answered on some of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like you said, weather in mid-April in Colorado is about as big a crapshoot as there is. It's like standing over that craps table and throwing those dice. You can have your strategy of how you're going to pick them up and throw them, but you have no idea how that's going to come out on the other end.
How they're going to roll. But I think it'll be, hopefully we get some good weather this time around. I think it's going to be interesting this spring to see, you know, what Marv does with Marion's offense and vice versa. You know, I think I don't know what Marv's philosophy is as a defensive coordinator. I didn't really look at his Virginia Tech teams. And I would expect that it's going to be significantly different in some ways than Robert Livingston, who's an NFL guy who came here with a career as an NFL defensive backs coach, you know. So one of the positives there is that Marv at least comes in as having done this at this level. So I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, and get they need to figure out where some of these guys belong, and they're going to have to do some things with, you know, on that defensive line to get both edge and defensive tackle spots to be as good as we need them to be. But I think most of the excitement that this spring is watching that offense and seeing what Marion does with all these guys.
No doubt. Yeah. The hope still springs eternal, but some questions that we had to analyze at the beginning of this podcast. William, it's always great catching up with you, and excited to keep doing with these shows with you.
Yeah. And I think this is, you know, I mean, this is the time of year to be optimistic and try to find things that are good. You know, if you can't be optimistic now, then there's really no point being a fan, it seems like to me. But a lot to have happen before this season starts, and I don't know, we're at that point right now where we, you know, we know who the players on the team are for the most part, but we don't know who's going to fit in where and what they're going to do. So this next 5 weeks or so, I think, is going to help answer some of those questions.
Awesome, William. Always appreciate you, like I said, and appreciate everybody out there for tuning in. Well, we'll see you on the flip side here. Is your business growing but not quite ready for a full-time CFO? Macaulay Capital offers fractional CFO services for companies doing more than $3 million in annual revenue. You get expert financial leadership without the full cost. Learn more about how you can improve your business's profitability and cash management at MacaulayCapital.com. If you know Boulder, you know the Hungry Toad. We've been serving this town since 1991, long before the lines on Pearl Street. Just north of campus, we're your local British pub with proper fish and chips, quality burgers, a scratch kitchen, real English cask ale, and no tourist fluff. We support CU football, women's soccer, and the loyal fans who keep it local. The Hungry Toad. Boulder born, Buffs proud.